Welcome to Creating Abundance with Alana Cahoon, sharing inspirational stories from experts around the world. Tap into your inner wisdom at alanacahoon.com. My guest today is John McCaskill. He and I met earlier this year in Los Angeles at a podcast convention. He is one of the most interesting people I've ever met. And so with that, I'm going to read his bio because I don't want you to miss anything. John is a retired Navy SEAL commander. We'll get to this later, but you do look pretty young to be retired, I'm just saying. John was the commander turned mindfulness and meditation teacher. He was born in South Africa, moved with his parents and four siblings to the U.S. when he was 7 years old, grew up in Ruston, Louisiana, where he was an avid track and cross-country runner. After graduating high school, John served briefly as an enlisted sailor in the Navy before receiving his appointment to the U.S. Naval Academy. He has a bachelor's in mathematics and a master's in operations research. John McCaskill has served in Iraq, Afghanistan, off the coast of Somalia, and in Panama. After retiring, he served as the deputy executive director and podcast host and producer for Veterans Path, P-A-T-H, a nonprofit organization that works to introduce meditation and mindfulness to veterans, to bring them a sense of peace, acceptance, transformation, and honor. He now does keynote speaking engagements on developing leadership, grit, and resilience at the individual and organizational levels. He also brings his own mindfulness consulting company, McCaskill Consulting LLC, bringing mindfulness and meditation to high-performing teams to aid in dealing with stress, anxiety, and depression, all while increasing focus, creativity, and productivity. John's wife, Becca, also served in the Navy and is now a civilian orthopedic physician assistant. Today, and together, they are proud parents of three small children, and recently, after an adventurous 6 months as a family in an RV, they have settled in Colorado. So welcome, John McCaskill. You're
here.
Thanks,
Alana. Great to be here. And yes, you're right. It is now three children, and we're on another RV adventure right now, as I mentioned to you earlier this morning when we spoke. So looking forward to this conversation and catching up.
I love it. So how does a Navy SEAL change his career path to that of a meditation and mindfulness teacher and coach?
Yeah, that's typically the question that I get is, you know, how do you go from being a special operator that, you know, everybody kind of perceives as this cold, hardened, battle-ready person? And I would say that I was the latter of those three, but I don't think that I was cold and hardened. But I was involved in an operation in 2005 that went sideways, and unfortunately we lost a lot of men on it. And I struggled after that operation with anxiety and stress and survivor's guilt and moral injury. The ironic thing is that I wasn't on that operation. I say that I was involved in it very intentionally because I was on the radios. I was back in the rear, if you will, in what's called the Joint Operations Center. And I was on the radios. I was on the computer. I was kind of monitoring the situation. And the reason I say that's ironic is that a lot of the time when I tell people that operation affected me more than any of the operations that I was on the battlefield is because it actually affected me more because I was not on the battlefield. Because as a SEAL operator, that's where I wanted to be. When I knew my men friends of mine were in trouble on the battlefield and I was sitting back in the rear on a computer and on a radio, I felt like I was in the wrong place and I felt like I was helpless. And that's why I ended up struggling with the traumatic effects of that post-traumatic stress injury. And I call it injury instead of disorder very intentionally as well, because I do feel that it is a physical injury that it happens to our brain after experiencing something traumatic in our lives. And that traumatic injury caused me what I mentioned before, the stress, the anxiety, the survivor's guilt, the moral injury. And I addressed that the best way that I knew how. First off, I addressed it by kind of boxing it up and putting it away somewhere where I wouldn't feel it. And the times that it did come up and I did feel it, I drank alcohol heavily and secretly. And then when that didn't help, I started abusing prescription medication secretly again. And that caused my performance to go down. It caused me to just kind of be an empty shell of the person that I had been before. I didn't feel the pain that I had felt, but I also didn't feel any sense of drive, any sense of fulfillment, any joy. And that made me very sad. And I got to a dark place in my life where I considered some very dark options. And I went and saw a counselor, and he recommended mindfulness and meditation to me to help bring me out of this place that I was in. And long story short, after pushing back against it initially, because I didn't believe in it, I was convinced by him when he sold it to me as a performance enhancement, I was convinced that I would try it. And I did try it and initially failed miserably because I tried to jump straight into the deep end and tried to do an hour-long meditation on day one. You as a seasoned practitioner know that that doesn't work. So I became very frustrated with the practice, and I went back and I told him what I had done. And he said, that's like lining up the starting line of a marathon without ever having run a step before. You got to work your way into that. And he introduced me to some practices that I know you're familiar with. He introduced me to some box breathing, some 4-7-8 breathing, just some basic breath work. And I realized that I had done breath work on the shooting range before in the SEAL teams. We didn't call it breath work. We called it tactical breathing. But we did it while we were on the shooting range to calm ourselves down physiologically. But I never thought about applying it in my personal life. So I started applying that box breathing, the 4-7-8 breathing, some of the other breath work that I learned there with him. And I started to feel a change in my life over time. And then I felt that I could get into some of the more in-depth meditations, some of the longer duration meditations. And when I did, I found it easier to do them now that I had started to settle my body, my mind, and my nervous system down. It didn't clear my mind. And that, as again, I know you know this, meditation does not clear your mind, but what it can do is help to settle your body, your mind, and your nervous system. And when I realized that, then I was able to do the meditations without the frustration and just experience them, experience myself as I was in that moment. And over time, I saw changes in myself. I felt changes in myself. I started to show up differently for my family, for my friends, for my colleagues at work. But most importantly, I started showing up differently for myself. And I felt as though I had found some sense of my prior self, some form of my prior self. And I felt better. I certainly don't say that I have completely healed. I feel that I am on a healing journey, a continual healing journey. But I feel that I am on that path now And before I was not, I was actually on a very destructive path. So now that I'm on that path and I've seen the benefits of the practices, I feel it's a duty and an obligation now to pay it forward and share them with others, because I've seen and I feel that mindfulness and meditation have not only changed my life for the better, but they quite literally saved my life. So I want to pay it forward. So here I am.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing your story with such depth of vulnerability. That is such courageous wisdom coming from your part. And I honor you for that. And I'm so very grateful that these tools have supported you in rising up out of a dark place, as you shared. And indeed. I love that you applied the word injury, versus disease or to post-traumatic injury, not syndrome or illness or disease or condition. It's a real injury when you experience trauma. It's an injury. And I think if everyone listening could apply that word and shift it for any real, traumatic injury experience you've had, and then those who maybe have not experienced such a depth of injury or trauma will have a better understanding of what that's like. So thank you. I think that's really important. I hope it catches on.
Yeah, thank you, Alana. I heard that first a few years ago. I'm forgetting the doctor's name, but there is a psychiatrist trying to change the very definition from post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, to post-traumatic stress injury, PTSI. And, I've always thought that was a funny name, because I feel that the people who do not have some type of reaction to a traumatic stressor, those are the ones I feel that have some type of disorder. I feel that if you're a normal human being and you're exposed to some type of traumatic stress, that you're going to have some type of injury. You're going to have some type of lasting reaction. And I don't feel it's a disorder. I feel it is, in fact, an injury. So I'm glad they're working to change that.
Yeah. And you also made a really wonderful point about meditation. And I love that here, with your just jump in Navy SEAL, maybe commander type personality or training. You're like, okay, I'm going to nail this. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to be great. And I'm going to get it the first day. And I'm going to do it for an hour.
Right.
That it was a terrible hour. Like frustration, stop all these stupid thoughts. And I'm not any good at this.
Right.
What was that like for you?
Yeah. Well, I wish that I could say that I lasted through that whole hour. I didn't. I was very frustrated within the first few minutes. And I was convinced at that point that meditation was for the birds and it was not for me. I don't know. I may have made it 3-4 minutes before I got up. My mind was on anything except that meditation. My mind was on, paying my taxes, changing the oil on my truck, my to-do list, everything. And then I got up and just realized, or rather thought, that mindfulness was not for me. Meditation was not for me. I was too high a performer. People who meditate must not have as many things on their minds as I do. These narratives started creeping into my mind about both myself and about meditation. But then after speaking with the counselor, the doctor, the following week, I realized that I've been doing it wrong. So I eased into it and then stayed consistent with it. And as you well know, that's the key to any type of transformation, is small, incremental, consistent effort. And that's where we change.
Small, persistent, or consistent effort.
Yeah.
Indeed. Excellent. Yeah. And so meditation is a practice.
That's why they call it that, right?
Yeah. Right. That's why it's not, you know, oh, I think I'm going to go meditate for a few minutes or an hour or whatever. And then you're done. And, you know, you don't go back until the next time you feel like you're frazzled. It's a practice that helps you to not heal basically the trauma, but attribute toward the healing of the trauma.
Right. Right.
So that the more you are able to settle your mind, and John, you and I spoke earlier about how thoughts can invade. So today, my intention, one of my intentions, is to deal with intrusive thoughts, thoughts about my to-do list instead of being here with you, you know, thoughts about what needs to get done at 8 o'clock versus being present right here and engaged in this moment and fully embracing whatever is to arise. And so how you do that, well, how meditation helps is that you're giving yourself a daily time out, time to rest. You know, it's not the time to create, although I do find this is when your creativity just bursts open because you're allowing yourself to quiet.
Right.
You're allowing all the invasive, intruding thoughts to settle, and then the light rises. The priorities rise.
Right.
The opportunities you may have whisked by the day before suddenly become clear. It also helps bring awareness throughout your life. And in my training and teaching of mindfulness is taking that practice off the cushion and into your life. So by starting your day and ideally ending your day with this quiet reflection, meditation, whatever style really appeals to you and your personality and lifestyle, then you're able to bring that awareness throughout the day so that it doesn't take you a day before you realize there was an incredible opportunity. You're there now. You see it as it's in front of you. And that opportunity can be, it could be a job. It could be a friendship. It could be just a beautiful moment. Like I listened to your podcast, and I think your most recent one was about nature.
Right.
You know, and so often people, you're driving or walking and you just don't even notice all around you is an opportunity for solitude, peace, and rejuvenation. And that's just share a little bit more about how nature is a form of meditation.
Oh my gosh. Yes. So that episode of my shared podcast, I share that with my buddy who you also know, Will Schneider. The podcast is Men Talking Mindfulness. Quick shameless plug there. But this particular episode, Will and I have decided to record a few solo episodes in between seasons just to keep the momentum going. And as I mentioned this morning when we spoke, I'm on vacation or a mini vacation, quasi vacation. I'm doing some work. But I was home in Louisiana. And I was out in my parents' backyard, and they have this beautiful backyard that's in the woods. You can hear there's a little stream that flows through the woods back there. You can hear, you know, the rustling of the trees, and you can feel the wind, and you can feel the warmth of the sun on your skin, and you can hear the bugs, much like I can hear right now here in Florida. But also being in green, there've been scientific studies that show just being out in nature, but specifically surrounding yourself by green nature, what that can do for your mind, what it can do for your soul. It's great for you. And then there's different ways to do it, right? They talk about forest bathing, which is kind of a Japanese practice, but it's starting to catch on in the West, which is going out into the forest and just walking. It's not literally bathing in the forest, right? It's just being out in nature. Well, you can do that while you go for a run. You can do that. Like so many of us unfortunately, we tune out when we go out into nature. We pop a set of headphones in and we tune out of the experience that we're in. Well, maybe rather than popping that set of headphones in every time, maybe once or twice every time you do it, is take those headphones out and tune in to the life that you're living, the experiences that you're having. Tune into the sounds, the smells, the sights, heck, the feelings. I mean, positive and negative. I don't want to say negative. Positive and non-positive, I guess, is a better way of saying it. Neutral. Because even the way we define or attach a connotation to a feeling, sometimes those feelings, both physical and emotional, they're not necessarily negative. They're just different. And if we can look at them that way, right? We spoke this morning about, I got out of bed, and when I first kind of sat up in bed, I was hurting. I'd had a rough night. My body was just kind of achy, as many of our bodies are in the morning. And I noticed it, and I very well could have been like, oh man, here is another day. I'm hurting again, and just gone about my day kind of grumpy and negative, kind of feeling down in the dumps. But instead, I took a second to acknowledge that I was hurting, tried not to view it in a negative light, acknowledged that it was kind of a wake-up call, no pun intended, but it was a wake-up call for me to say, hey, you know what? Maybe you need to move. Maybe you need to stretch, move your body, express some gratitude for the fact that you're alive, the fact that you did wake up this morning, the fact that you had a bed to sleep in. And when I started to notice pain as a messenger rather than something negative, I embraced it, and it has made my day infinitely better, right? I can smile walking through the day. I can be a different dad, a different husband, a different friend, show up differently for them, those that I love, and for myself, because I feel different. So I think getting into nature is tied to that. When we sit under fluorescent lights all day, when we sit in stale air all day, it starts to wear on us. And if we can get up and move around, first of all, and then second of all, move around in nature, breathe some of that fresh air in, see some of those sights, feel some of those feelings, it's like nutrients for our body. We need that. We need it. I mean, there have been times when I have sat in my office all day from the beginning of the day to the end, and I feel completely different than if I stop and take a break here and there and walk, even if it's just a block, walk around the block and get outside. That's a game changer. So sorry, I rambled on there a little bit.
No, that's you. Lots of nuggets there, John. Thank you very much. And I think that last bit of wisdom is get out, take breaks. And it's so funny how some memories are illuminated. I just had a memory of, I want to say second grade or third grade in Catholic school, where one of the teachers was reading before a test that it's important to get up and walk around because there's so much stress in a test. So I'm grateful that I have a positive memory of Catholic school.
Wow, second grade doing that. That's pretty impressive that the teacher was thinking that, yeah, that outside the box for second graders.
Yeah, that was something. Well, of course, who could sit still in second grade?
Right.
Yeah. But getting out in fresh air and just the greenery, it takes you out of your head. I like to use the phrase, get out of your head and into your body.
Yeah.
And yep, one of the ways you can actually get in your body, like you said, stretch, exercise, walk. Walking is not hard and it's beautiful. Right. It's a great way to get your aerobics going. You don't have to run. You don't have to even walk fast. Just walk. And
right.
And breathe. And you talked earlier about some breathing techniques. And I love that you related this breath work, which is I believe breath work is the foundation of meditation.
Agreed.
Step one of meditation is focus on your breath. Because when you focus on your breath, you realize, A, you're most likely breathing shallowly,
right,
which induces anxiety. So the more deeply you can breathe, that sigh, make that your normal breath, breathing more deeply. But you were reminded that you use breath work during target practice. I think that was it.
Right? Yeah.
Because meditation is the skill of focusing the mind. It's about mind mastery in a nutshell, really, when you drop all of the styles and everything off, it's about, I realize there are many thoughts going on in my mind. I realize I am a human being and have many obligations and relationships, but I choose the thoughts. I choose the thoughts that I focus on and carry. And I think one of the most important aspects of meditation and mindfulness training and implementing it into your life is to be non-judgmental with yourself. And because, like you said, the thoughts are going to come. We're still thinking beings, you know?
Right.
And some of us have a lot of thoughts. And this is simply a technique to manage them and be in control of your life. Because I also do truly believe that our thoughts create a reality.
100%. And, you know, I think the term mindfulness, the terms meditation, unfortunately, in the West, they've started to be, one, mindfulness kind of gets this bad stigma around it initially, and then two, there's a misconception that mindfulness is meditation and meditation is mindfulness. I see that they are complementary to one another, but they're not necessarily the same, right? Like I was talking about getting into nature and just walking around, paying attention to the sights, the sounds, the feelings, the smells, the emotions that you're experiencing. That can be mindfulness. We're experiencing mindfulness and practicing mindfulness right now, you and I are, in that we're having a conversation, we're paying attention to it, we're paying attention to what is being said, and not trying to formulate an answer right off the bat. I'm listening to what it is you're saying. You're listening to what it is I'm saying. And we don't have a bajillion windows open in the background on our computer, right? We're paying attention to the here and now. And the key that you mentioned there, without judgment, we judge ourselves all the time. We judge ourselves for what it is we're feeling, for what it is we're thinking, for what it is we're doing. And then on top of that, we judge ourselves for judging ourselves. And it kind of becomes this downward spiral, right? So in meditation, coming back to the kind of the misnomers or misunderstanding of the terms meditation and mindfulness, I've started using this new term. I kind of made it up. I did make it up. But it is intentionally directed focus. And when I use that with some of my colleagues, some of the people that I work with, veterans, first responders, Customs and Border Protection, law enforcement, intentionally directed focus seems like it lands better with some people. But if I were to explain intentionally directed focus and mindfulness and meditation, they're one and the same. It's just a different term. I think people are starting to understand better what they are, what they are not, how they all complement one another, and how both of them, mindfulness and meditation, and the two together, can improve your life in all aspects. Personally and professionally, mentally, physically, it can be a game changer. And it's definitely not one that I thought if you'd asked me 10 years ago, one, if I would be practicing, I would have thought you were loony. And then two, if I thought that this is what I'd be doing for a living, I would have said, yeah, you're you're talking to the wrong person here. But lo and behold, here I am, because I've seen the benefits, and I know that it can be a game changer, a life changer. So,
yeah. And I'd like to share with everyone, your podcast is called Men Talking Mindfulness. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes. Right.
So it's John McCaskill along with Will Schneider.
Schneider. Yep.
Yeah. And, so powerful. I personally love it because my son's either going to become a fan or he's going to start yelling at me because I'm sending him your episodes to listen to. You know, so wonderful for young men, I think, especially to listen to someone like you and Will. You come from different walks of life, but you're men, you've lived life, you continue to live life, you've fought. You've fought for our country. And thank you very much for that. We are all thank honored you. And grateful for that. And you have suffered for that. And you're sharing the tools that have supported you through that. And that these tools can support every young man who's simply trying to get through this world. It's an ever-changing world. The challenges today are big and
unbelievable.
And to note that your podcast offers these tools and experiences and someone to relate to. So I'm grateful for you.
Well, thank
for
you.
All of the young men out there, and of course all men and women. I enjoy listening to the two of you. It gives me hope and optimism that men will embrace a more, let's say, grounded and open-minded, open-hearted way of living. And it's true. It's really great. It shows. It's not about, it's not about sitting on a mountaintop doing yoga, although it can, that's an aspect of it.
Right.
You are a very grounded leader. You're a conscious leader. And that's something I'd like everyone to really listen to, is to become a conscious leader means being fully aware of who you are, your surroundings, and making wise choices. And that's about mind training, and meditation mindfulness is absolutely mind training. Yeah. And, indeed. Bringing that heart, I always have to say, you got to connect your heart to your mind, all of it. And trust your gut and your intuition. You bring all of those three things together, and life becomes a lot easier and more gentle and graceful.
More fulfilling.
More fulfilling.
But, yeah. Happiness. Like, what are we here for? Right.
Yeah.
I believe we're here to serve others, and I believe we are here to find some sense of fulfillment. Does fulfillment necessarily mean being happy all the time? Absolutely not. But it means finding some purpose, finding some type of enjoyment, not necessarily happiness, but enjoyment. And I feel I am more aware of those times when I'm experiencing joy because I'm present. Right. I'm on, again, a quasi vacation here in this beautiful spot. I can see the beach right there. It's unbelievable, beautiful. And my kids are here. My wife is here. And, if I was on my phone the whole time and I wasn't experiencing that, this beauty, this opportunity for joy, then I would miss it. And then I would look at my life and say, hey, you know what? I'm a miserable person. I don't have any joy or happiness in my life. That's not true. We have joy. We have happiness. We just have to be aware of it. We have to look for it. Even in the tough times, even when we're stressed about work, even when we're stressed about a relationship, even when we're sick, those are incredibly difficult times. but there's also joy to be found in those times. And when we can find joy, when we can find some moments of joy in the tough times, then we can still find a sense of fulfillment. And I think that's critically important for us as human beings.
Thank you. Those are beautiful words. And as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking of how powerful gratitude is in finding those moments of joy. What am I thankful for? Mm-hmm. And especially in those moments where you feel yourself being tugged down into a darker, anxious or depressed place. What am I grateful for that takes you out? It's almost like a cure, just lifts you up and says, oh, well, I'm grateful because I have my freedom. Right. Or I have a job, or I have a loved one, or I have a desk. I have warmth or coolness. Right. I have my ability to walk, my ability to move, to drive, to write, to think. And whatever that is, the simplest of form. I think I shared earlier, I was grateful for water this morning. Not everyone has water.
Right.
We take these things for granted.
Yeah. So I will say, are you familiar with the Calm meditation app at all?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm working with them and I'm working on some content that's supposed to be released later this fall. And I wrote a whole bit on gratitude. And one of the men that I was working with that's reviewing my scripts that I've written, he said, I want to make sure in this bit about gratitude that you acknowledge people who are struggling to find things to be grateful for. And I took a step back and I thought, you know what? You're right. When I say gratitude, when I say try to be grateful for the things that are in your life, I also acknowledge that there are hardships and there are times when we're going to feel down. And there are going to be times when it not only feels difficult to express gratitude, but it may feel almost completely impossible. And it's times like this that I think you need to give yourself some great grace and don't necessarily feel like you have to find something that you're grateful for. But sit with these emotions, of anger, frustration, sadness, angst, anxiety, stress. Sit with them. And if you're able, during that time that you're sitting with these difficult emotions, to calm your mind, to calm your nervous system, to calm your body, sometimes then you may be able to find the things that you didn't see before. Like you mentioned, the water, the having a bed to sleep on, having a roof over your head. But you got to start with self-compassion and giving yourself some grace, I feel. So I just wanted to mention that for some of your audience, some of your community who may hear what we're talking about and say, great, these two are just being toxic positivity folks. Which, you know, I love positivity, but I also understand the reality of life.
Yeah, not if you were in my head this morning. I shared with John, whoever's listening or watching, I was pulling thoughts out, just imagining pulling these toxic thoughts out of my head. You know, we're all human, and that's the reality.
Right.
I'm in a human body with a human mind, and I'm exposed to everything that everybody else is exposed to. I do my best using mindfulness to avoid the pitfalls and to, you know, call upon my wisdom and higher power to guide me into an easier path. Not always accomplished, but at least I set my intention for that.
Right. And for the pitfalls that you can't avoid, you can get out of them that much faster.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. So as we wrap up, I want everyone to know this is John McCaskill. You run your own company or a mindfulness meditation teacher, coach. You're a keynote speaker, as you can all see, incredible speaker, very charismatic, inspirational on stage. You work with companies. I know you're working with a company now, building their resilience, their team optimization, et cetera. Do you want to say just a bit and how people can find you?
Yeah, I'll answer that last one first. It's pretty easy. If you just go to johnmccaskill.com/links. So that's J-O-N, no H, J-O-N McCaskill, MacaskillMacaskill.com/links. That'll take you to a link to my podcast, a link to my speaking, a link to my social media, my email, every way that's out there to get a hold of me. Happy to answer any questions or connect with some of your listeners who may just want to connect. But yes, I started my own company. It's McCaskill Consulting, now doing business as Frogman Mindfulness. And that Frogman, that's kind of a hat tip to the old Navy SEALs, the underwater demolition teams of the yesteryear, the legacy that is now the SEALs from underwater demolition. So Frogman Mindfulness. And yeah, I do keynote speaking. I do training. I partnered with Will, my podcast co-host, for the Men Talking Mindfulness podcast. We do training together, along with our business partner and friend, Dr. Teresa Larson. She's a doctor of physical therapy, and Will does the yoga and some of the meditation. I do meditation, the mindfulness, and then Teresa, as a doctor of physical therapy, she does a lot of the movement. So we feel that if we work on the body and the mind together, we can heal everything, because the body can heal the mind and the mind can heal the body. So working together, where we feel that we've got some secret sauce there. So yeah, that's all the things that I've got going on. And thank you for the opportunity to share those.
Beautiful. Thank you very much, John. Thank you, Alana. And I will see you soon.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
The audience, yes. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Alana Cahoon. This is Creating Abundance for Radiant Health, Wealth, and Happiness. You can learn more on my website, which is my name, alanacahoon.com, A-L-A-N-A-C-A-H-O-O-N. Lots of information about meditation, some free meditations there, guidance for you on your path if you want to get started, etc. And come join us on our podcasts, Men Talking Mindfulness, Creating Abundance. And with that, namaste.
Stay.
Thank you for listening to Creating Abundance. Be sure to like and subscribe. Stay tuned for the next podcast and get your free ebook at alanacahoon.com/ebook.